Part 2, Chapter 10, in which the dead rise and Harvey goes for the gold. The stars stretched from horizon to horizon, and Mahogany remained awake all through the night, keeping his eyes on the Pleiades, on late-setting Bootes, and on the Bear. Harvey remained awake too, filled with the limitless expanse. At dawn they came to a passage between two islands and spotted a man on the shore to their right. He had rich, dark hair and was wearing a purple cloak. A hunt, he said with a smile in his eyes, had taken him far from his home, and he needed a ride up the coast. When Harvey and Mahogany obliged him, he promised to reward them with food and drink, but when he stepped aboard, he dropped the jug he was carrying and its contents emptied on the deck. "Damn you, Dion," he said to himself, pulling another container from beneath his cloak. The wine was unmixed and red, and worked quickly on its consumers. They joked and laughed, and laughed and joked and laughed, and laughed and joked. Then Harvey slipped into the water and began to jump about like a drunken dolphin, describing broken arabesques against the azure sky. The narrator breaks in. O frolicking flipper of the sea, what god is this that has come to lighten your load? Could it be the Loud One, the Twice-Born, the Son of Thunder, God of Resurrection and God of the Vine? Drink up, ye merry travelers, drink up and grow young with the sweet nectar of spring. Dion directed them past the islands to the mainland of Greece, where they secured the raft and walked until they came to a cool valley. There they saw every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food, and every beast of the field that man had ever named. A river went out to water the garden, and they followed it to where it split into four streams. "Welcome to the valley of Nysa," said Dion. And they looked around and saw that it was good. Footnote. Valley of Nysa, mythical home of Dionysus, here the site of the Eleusinian Mysteries. Soon other people arrived. They came from the four corners of the wind and from the regions above and beneath the earth, and in no time they numbered in the thousands. At 3 minutes after 11 o'clock, Dion turned to the crowd. "Hear ye, dryads, and nereids, and naiads, and oreads, and alciads, and oceanids, and all marriageable and unmarriageable women and men, wherever you may be. We are here to celebrate the season when the vine puts forth its branches, the flowers spring from the clay, and the animals fornicate directly. Come dance with us and entertain this noble captain and friend who have recently emerged from the winter in their hearts." A band struck up a rendition of their famous song, "Friend of the Devil," and everyone began to dance. "C'est bacchanal!" roared Harvey and Mahogany, rushing into the crowd. "Vachement bacchanal!" As the sun reached its zenith, the dancers began to disrobe, and our heroes stripped naked with them. Harvey was astounded. Everywhere he looked, he saw a reflection of himself. One person swayed like a tree, another drifted like a cloud, another darted like a fish, another roared like a lion. But the most interesting was a young British fellow who was slinking about on the ground. Harvey did the same, and in no time everyone was doing the Jackson Quintilius lizard dance. Harvey led the group to the base of an apple tree, and when he slithered up, its fruit fell from the branches. The dancers fell on it, uttered several sharp cries, then turned on the animals in the field. As they pursued the beasts, they sang, "Oh, sweet upon the mountain, the dancing and song, the maddening rushing flight! Oh, sweet to sink to earth outworn, when the wild goat has been hunted and caught! Oh, the joy of the blood and the raw red flesh!" Harvey and Mahogany danced for 5 days and 5 nights until they collapsed from exhaustion. When they finally awoke, it was raining, and they started down the nearest road. After several hours, they arrived in the small town of Olympia, where they were greeted by a medium-sized rooster. The bird seemed to be waiting for them, so they followed it down the street to the Herrion Hotel. As they checked into their room, they could hear a group of travelers next door. Mahogany went to investigate. It was a group of 7, a family of 5 and 2 friends, who had been traveling for 3 months in Western Europe and were near the end of their trip. They had split up to follow different paths and were now reunited, swapping stories of the places they had been. The narrator intervenes. Dear reader, remember this. Take no lesson from this timeless tale, but take as truth that there is nothing better nor more delightful than when a whole people make merry together. The guests sit in their places to listen. The table is loaded with bread and meats, and the cupbearer draws wine for each and every one. This is the fairest sight that sight can see. While Mahogany talked with his new friends, Harvey went out. It was no longer raining. Thought the captain, inhaling the fragrant freshness. The main street of Olympia led him to the ruins outside of town, but when he arrived at the gate, it was locked, and so he had to climb the fence. There was no one there, only the wind whistling through the broken pillars, and an occasional bird shaking new buds from the branches. Eventually, Harvey wandered onto a wide and level field. "Hear ye, O gods! It is I, Captain Jackson Harvey, come to challenge the swiftest and strongest athletes of all time. Send me the best your people can produce, and I will reward them with utter defeat." And so saying, Harvey charged onto the field with his arms raised and clasped overhead, imagining he could hear the cheers of thousands rising up around him. He waved and bowed and waved, and threw kisses to his admirers in the stands. Then his shoelaces, which had come untied during the walk, grabbed his ankles and threw him, face down, into the form of an old man there some 2,724 years before, and Harvey was transported back in time. "You old bag of bones," said a youth, helping Harvey to his feet. "Who do you think you are? There's nothing of an athlete about you." "Pardon me," said Harvey, looking at the thousands of admirers whose cheers rose up around him. The youth picked up a discus and hurled it into the distance. "Match that, old man." "You," said Harvey, "are an insolent fellow. So true it is that the gods do not grace all men alike in speech, person, and understanding. For no god could make a finer-looking fellow, but you are a fool." Seizing a discus heavier and more massive, Harvey swung it back and threw it across the field. It made a humming noise as it flew through the air, and Athena, in the form of a man, marked the place where it fell, 20 yards beyond the mark of the other. The foot races came next, and the competition was fierce. The course was set out from the starting post, and the group raised a cloud of dust as they all flew forward at once. Harvey did not win, but neither did his nemesis. They were both bested by a beautiful youth from Olympia named Telemachus Jones. At the day's end, a feast was prepared for the competitors. The table was set with the finest meats, and the wine was unmixed and red, and the guests ate with unbridled pleasure. When everyone had had their fill, the host called for music and asked Harvey if he could play. "Poorly," replied Harvey, "but with all my soul." On this a servant brought out a lyre, and the captain took his place in the center of the group. just as it had on Sante, the instrument took control of his spirit, and he played with abandon. He sang of the wandering moon and the toils of the sun, of the making of man and the creation of the creatures, and of Arcturus and Hyades and the twin bears. Telemachus Jones was charmed with the beauty of the song, and after the party he invited the captain to sleep at his home. It was a warm summer night, and the great bear was rising as they made their way through the fields. At one point Telemachus stopped and tried to kiss the captain, but Harvey pulled away. It wasn't that Harvey didn't care for the boy, didn't feel the same spiritual attraction, but Harvey was still sharing the personality of the old man whose form he had taken, and he had to be faithful to his wife, Penelope. The young man tried again, and again Harvey refused. "I'm sorry," said Harvey, trying to soothe the boy's tears. Eventually they reached their destination, and Telemachus regained his composure. Then they sat in the starlight and talked, until the boy slipped off to sleep, and Harvey lay down next to him. Footnote. Dr. Hathaway and Mr. Renard, in their book The Pig Disrobed, Victim Press, Boston, 2007, page 89, protest the fact that Harvey does not make love to the young man. "The authorities state," Dr. Hathaway says, in The Making of a Masterpiece in the Face of New Traditional Criticism, Politically Correct Press, Boston, 2005, page 1, that there should be at least one homosexual encounter in every novel if that novel is to be considered great. Back to the text. The next morning, Telemachus asked Harvey to teach him to throw the discus, and they went to where Harvey had astounded the crowd the day before. Unfortunately, there was a tremendous wind on the field that caught the metal discs and twisted them like frisbees, sending them far off course. One flew to the left, another to the right, and some even landed behind them. "Christ, that was close," said Telemachus, when a throw missed his head by the space of a second. Harvey was not so lucky, for the next throw hit him flush in the face and jarred him back to 2013. Mahogany was still with his new friends when the captain got to the hotel. The father of the group was distributing the mail they had received post-restant in Nice. Nice, thought Harvey, remembering Sisyphus and the million years he had spent with him. They had left more than a passing impression on the mirror of his soul, and he felt sad. "I've got to see Sisyphus," cried the captain. "Sisyphus?" said Mahogany. "Sisyphus," echoed Harvey. "Then we'll have to return to France," said Mahogany. "Return to France," echoed Harvey. The next morning they started for the coast to look for their raft. The road led off in a straight, unbroken line, bordered on each side by olive trees that struggled to take root in the rocky soil. There was an indescribable beauty in the land, a beauty that whispered in the wind upon the ears. It was the pure extension of the soul, stretching beyond the boundaries of intellectual comprehension, beyond the limitless gaze of horizons. At one point they passed a flock of sheep grazing in a field, and Harvey scampered off to join them. However, before Harvey could ingratiate himself to his fleecy friends, a woman sprang from the flock and clubbed him over the head with a mallet. This was indeed fortuitous, for had the captain not been knocked unconscious, there would have been 17 Captain Harveys conceiving themselves in the unsuspecting wool of the world. "What was that?" said Harvey, when he came to his senses. "I'm not sure," said Mahogany. "It looked like the woman you wrote poetry for in Verona." Footnote. In her famous book, Pigs, 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 Sue Publishers, Fayetteville, North Carolina, 1997, page 936, Dr. Julia Hathaway writes, "I never did any such thing." It was evening when Harvey and Mahogany reached the raft, and they set the sails and drifted into a deep and dreamless sleep.